Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Violet Reiki Radio. Okay, just bear with me a second. I will be right back. Okay, everybody, hang in there. I think we've got things cleared up. Let's see if I have Franz on the line.
This
Hello?
Is Franz speaking.
Oh, Franz, bless the Reiki. We're having technical difficulty, but I'm so glad we were able to connect.
Oh, that's good. I didn't hear anything, so I just kept hanging on the phone, and whatever happened, it's fine. So that's good.
Yes, so long as you and I are connected and on the air, which seems to be what is true in the present moment, we're great.
Oh, that's good. Thanks, Rose.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Franz. This is such an honor. And I'm going to try and bear with the echo I'm hearing of my own voice behind me. for my listeners.
You sound clear here, so that's good.
Oh, great. I've been having wonderful connections with Australia over the past 2 days. So I think it's an impending omen of things to come. So hopefully I'll get to make a trip down there and see you guys.
That would be great. It's wonderful here. Actually, we have a beautiful summer at the moment.
Oh, nice. For those of my listeners who don't know, Franz is the co-founder of the International House of Reiki. And along with his wife, Bronwyn, they live in Australia. I'm very happy to say Franz has been doing a lot of traveling lately, which when I first became aware of the International House of Reiki and Franz and Bronwyn's great teaching, he didn't travel as much. And now he is making himself available in more places, and they have webinars and online classes. So it's a wonderful thing. You want any information, just go to the International House of Reiki. And you could also contact me. I'll definitely, you know, get you guys in the right direction. And tonight we're going to talk about Reiki. Franz, I'm curious, how did you start? What brought you to Reiki?
Well, that's a really good question, Rose. I was very skeptical always about all of these kind of things. I was more a party person.
a party person? Hard to imagine.
That's hard to see. Yeah, no, but I suffered from lower back problems since I was 16 till probably till I was 30. And I was told that it would only get worse when I was getting older and that I had to just take painkillers and physiotherapy and stuff like that. When I was young, they put my whole torso into plaster once for 9 weeks, all of those kind of things. And yes, indeed, it became kind of more and more painful, and I had more bouts of these kind of experiences in my late 20s. And I lived in Holland at that time with Bronwyn, and we decided to move to Asia and travel around. So we ended up in India. And I remember in the first kind of few months in India, we went up to the Himalayas, and I was laying in a hotel because I couldn't move from my back, and Bronwyn was doing some sightseeing, and I thought, wow, this is just being crazy. So I kind of suddenly had the intent, I need to do something for myself for that. And I think when we set that intent, it's so powerful. And I only, realized that later on how powerful that could be. So I set the intent for myself, I need to heal myself, I need to do something for myself. This is crazy, I'm 30, I can hardly carry a backpack, it's just being ridiculous. So the next couple of days I start to meet all sorts of people who did some massage or some meditation, and one day I met this American guy, I remember Curtis, and Curtis said, oh, there is a local lady, a local shaman doing some healings, do you want to come along? And I said, okay, that will be great. So we went along, and it was only about maybe 5 Westerners, and the little house where it was taking place was chock-a-block full of locals. And this lady would touch each person or say something in a local dialect, and she had a little tube where she would suck out some stuff. And after she had kind of gone through all of the crowd, she said something into the local dialect, and she said, oh, it was being translated, one of the foreigners needs to come forward. So the other four, or I can't remember how many there were, but it was only a small group, said, oh, Franz, you go. So I went forward, pointed to my back, and as soon as he touched me, I could feel this immense kind of heat going through me. I felt I completely disappeared, and I started to cry. It felt that I couldn't put a time frame to it on how long that took place. It could have been 1 minute or it could have been an hour. I know it wasn't an hour, but there was no time frame to it. Afterwards, I sat down and I go, what the hell just happened to me, This skeptical person needed something, what I could really, really feel. And now the next day, not necessarily that my back was better, but the next day I wanted to go to the local backpacker shop where they had like books for trade-in, and I wanted to get books on spirituality. So I got some books on Buddhism, on Hinduism, on yoga, and a couple of weeks later I needed to buy these books, what I never had before. So see, definitely triggered something inside of me. And so one day I bought a Reiki book, and I remember sitting on the edge of a bed doing these hand positions and reading about it. And, oh, this sounds interesting. And then I met a Reiki teacher in Kathmandu, Nepal, and we lived there. We got married there as well, Roman and I. And we did a Reiki 1, 2, and 3 class there, what was absolutely fantastic. And actually really suddenly, we opened up a Reiki center in India for a year, and we started to help people as a volunteer basis on the tea plantations doing treatments. But the most interesting thing was that when I was there, in Darjeeling and around is very well known for healers, Nepalese, Hindu, Buddhist, shamanic. And I had such a drive to learn more. And when I talked to all these people who did healing, they all had one thing in common, and that they all were doing meditations themselves. They were all having really solid meditation practices. And I was never taught that within the system of Reiki, how I learned it in the first place. So that kind of started to drive my search on, was meditation part of the system of Reiki in Japan itself. And there was something else that started to happen at that time. I started to get really strange dreams. Rose, they were so weird. And I would have, like, for weeks, one particular dream, and then I would wake up and I could feel these massive amounts of energy going through my body. And then a dream would shift, and I would have that dream for a couple of weeks. And because it was all very new for me, I wanted to talk about it, but I didn't know who to talk about. So over time, I met a friend there, an American guy called Ray, and Ray lived in India and studied, or actually he was in retreat for 10 years with Tibetan Rinpoche, and or Tibetan yogi. And so I asked Ray, I said, Ray, can I talk to you? I've got all these strange experiences, and I don't know what to do with it or what it means. So I recounted these experiences. And he said, Franz, are you practicing Buddhism? And I said, what are you talking about? He said, look, these dreams, what you're experiencing in Buddhist traditions, these are dreams, what means your purification yourself. These are very clear dreams, what Buddhist teachers are looking for. And I said, well, I don't know. I just throw some symbols around and do some hands-on healing. I have no idea where it came from, you know.
Talk about divine guidance.
Well, that's it. So then I became really interested. What am I really practicing, you know, that I have these experiences?
It's like you were more than a clear channel. You were just a transparent channel, doing just pure divine guidance, doing whatever you were told or impressed that it was working.
I know it was really strange because, you know, as I say, I was quite a big party person up till that time, and I stopped drinking, stopped smoking, and felt much healthier. I'm 47 now, and I recently had to fix a pond, which is about 15 by 15 meters, and carry heavy basalt rocks. I tell you, I couldn't do that when I was 28. I feel so much stronger. I haven't had back problems for the last 17 years.
Right. Right.
So, but yeah, so these kind of experiences, I wanted to know where Reiki came from. So that it was one of the reasons over the years that we started to do a lot of research in how is the system of Reiki practiced in Japan, who was teaching it still there. So we started to do a lot of training with some of the Japanese teachers like Hiroshi Doi, Yakuten Inamoto. In 2001, I met with Mrs. Yamaguchi. I didn't do their training, but and then in the late last few years, I've been really focusing on really kind of what Usui would have practiced himself. So actually training not necessarily with Reiki teachers, but Japanese spiritual teachers like priests, in Shigendo, Tendai, Shingon, who still teach very authentic practices, what was around is at the time of Mikusui. Mm-hmm. Because I want to know where did Mikusui get his teachings from and how did he create the system of Reiki. And so kind of that's a little bit been my journey.
Well, now I have a confession to make to you. I don't know if I've ever told you this because I saw you here in New York twice. After I had taken my first level or second level, I felt that the materials I was given were just not enough, you know, and as you said, you know, you get on this Reiki journey and you become insatiable for knowledge about Reiki and where it came from and the whole thing, and you want more, more, more. And I was searching out you know, other Reiki resources and people, and I found the Reiki source book. And when I read that book and I read about you and Bronwyn, I was like, these are the people. I'm going to learn so much. And that started my love affair with you guys in the International House of Reiki.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, glad it's been helpful. I mean, I found it very fascinating for myself, and I think the deeper I go, therefore also the deeper we can take our own students, you know. And I find it so important because there's so many layers to the system of Reiki.
Yes. It's, you know, a lot of people don't think about it as a spiritual practice, and a lot of people are so used to healing, hands on healing. It's healing. It's physical pain. It's you know, all the disease and this and yes. And they don't think about it where I'm you know, lately also myself promoting it more as, but it is a spiritual practice. And because it's a spiritual practice, you are so much more able to help people in their personal growth, in their spiritual growth. And now that everyone is saying, well, you know, you have to look in the mirror, go within, love yourself, start with you, I find it resonates exactly with Reiki. Are you finding that?
Oh, absolutely, I agree. You know, like, what is really interesting, I'm training with this Ajari in Japan, and an Ajari means like a priest who trains other priests, so, you know, a very high priest. And also, his own teacher was kind of seen as like the Dalai Lama of Japan. You know, if you would go to any monk or nun in Japan and you would say Sakai-san, they would all know who he was. So my teacher was a direct student of this man. And before I was allowed to come to Japan and train with him, they're very selective. They're very peculiar. Even for the Japanese, you know, you cannot just go up to people like that and say, I want to train with you. You have to be either recommended or they have to invite you. So right. What I didn't know, so I was recommended by someone, and it was really funny. The teacher who I was recommended by, he said, okay, Franz, I know you now for 10 years. I've been working with you for 10 years. Now I can safely recommend you. So he recommends me to this man, to this Ajari, and he sent an email in Japanese and in English. And fortunately, this Ajari speaks English. And I didn't hear back for a while. So I emailed the man who introduced me, and I said, oh, shall I email him? I said, no, you know, often he's away in the mountains practicing, so wait for a while. But I'm an impatient person sometimes. I still have lots to learn. So I sent an email to him and kind of talked a little bit more about myself. And then he sent me an email back, what was really peculiar, with all these Reiki questions, you know, like, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? For example, what do you think Honsha Sei Shinen, the level 2 symbol and mantra, means? And I go, geez, this guy knows what he's talking about, and I'm in trouble. And, you know, anyway, I answered these questions to my best ability. And so he said, okay, I think you've answered the questions according to my understanding of what Mikasui's teachings is. I invite you to come to Japan. And when I was in Japan, what was really interesting, after a couple of days, he said, Franz, I have to confess something. He said, I had a lot of trouble with you. And he said, because you were introduced by one of my students who I trust, I had a certain obligation. He said, but I wanted to see what modern Japanese Reiki teachers teach in Japan as Mikusui is teaching. So actually he did a Shodan and Okuden class with a Japanese Reiki teacher. And he didn't really enjoy it. So he thought it wasn't really in line with Mikusui's teachings, and therefore he sent me an email with all these questions. And what was really interesting, and I think it was really what you were saying, you know, bringing it back to the self, and even that a lot of people say, yeah, Reiki is a spiritual practice, it's often still so externalized. So even that they might say, oh, yeah, we practice a spiritual practice, everything what they teach at the same time has become quite externalized. And I think also that's what this Ajari was really worried about the modern way he perceived when he did this Shodan and Okuden class in Japan. And I'm not saying that it was good or right. You know, it was just his perspective. And I agree with his perspective because if I want to, say, for example, drink a juice and I have a straw where I drink it through, if there's a hole in the straw or if there's rubbish in the straw, I can only get a little bit of water or maybe sometimes not at all. So for me to drink this juice, the straw needs to be completely clear, completely straight, so that I can really, you know, benefit from it. And I think this is so important that we do exactly the same to help other people. We need to find that wisdom and compassion within ourselves. And, you know, what is really interesting is that we can also see that within the precepts of the system of Reiki. The precepts of the system of Reiki is, first of all about yourself. Only in the last bit it said, be kind to others or show compassion to others. But the first part is really about yourself, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Everything is, I will not anger, I will not worry. It's all in the I.
Well, that's it. And also, if we think about it, and, you know, you hit the hammer on a nail, it says, you know, do not anger or do not worry. But it's all the I. It's the I who angers or the I who worries or the I who is humble or the I who is going to be compassionate. So
right, and it's not the
around,
I. It's not the I as in the ego I. It's the I meaning
right.
The within, the self, the soul.
That's it. This is why I said if we flip this question around, then we actually can see that the precepts are talking. The deepest level of the precepts is saying, "Let go of the I." Because when we let go of the I, there is no I who gets angry. There's no I who gets worried. There's no I who is in the way of being humble. There's no I who's in the way who gets on, you know, for honesty. There's no I in the way for compassion to other people. So yeah, he's really emphasizing all of the tools within the system of Reiki is emphasizing our own personal spiritual development and hence on healing. I always see it's a byproduct of that.
Yes, it's like the dessert.
Absolutely,
like
it's the dessert.
The whole thing is the meal, okay? That's all the components, the seven courses of the meal. But and the hands-on healing, yes, that's the dessert. But, you know, you need both together.
Absolutely, I agree.
You know, while we're talking about this, you're just talking about how you had to be referred, recommended, and everything, and it's very difficult to get in, and there's tradition, you know. I want to address here before I forget, what do you think, because I'm famous for saying that there's a big difference between Eastern and Western ideas about Reiki. I'm not in the business of handing out certificates. I've had many people come to me, pay me anything. I want to become a master. Can I just take this class like now? I don't do that. I also test my students, and in every class when I say to them, okay, now when you come back, we'll have a test, and they look at me and like, you're kidding. And I'm like, no. I have to know what you know because they're like, oh, if I don't pass my test from level one to level two, I can't take level two. I said, no, there's no such thing. I just want to see before I start the level two class what you are not, you know, 100% comfortable with and what you haven't really wrapped your head around at this point. We'll go over it. We'll review it. We'll get you comfortable with it. Refresh your mind, and then we go on to level two. No one ever doesn't pass or doesn't get to take a level, but I need to know what you're working with. But so I call that when people come and say, I want my certificate, what do you mean you're going to test me? To that, I say that's the Western idea or philosophy of instant coffee. And I feel that is not the traditional Japanese teachings in really anything of the culture, but with regard to Reiki, it's practiced much more differently. There's more emphasis on tradition. There's more emphasis on respect, integrity, ethics. Also, when I have students coming from master level, I put that in my teaching also, if I see this student is lacking somewhere, then I make them wait for the master level.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think about this Eastern kind of, you know, traditional way versus the what I call Western instant coffee?
Well, you know, Rose, I used to say Japanese and Western or Eastern and Western, but over the years I have changed it to modern and traditional because I see a lot of modern Japanese Reiki teachers and not modern Japanese Reiki teachers, but also modern Japanese martial arts teachers or modern Japanese Buddhist teachers or doing a very similar thing. It's like instant gratification. And so now my mind has really shifted to making a distinction between modern and traditional. So even in Japan, we see that a lot of modern people, they want to be like the West. You know, they want instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And years ago when I was in Japan, I was it was raining. It was in Kyoto. And it was in the evening. And I walk around in these little neighborhood, little streets. And it's pitch black, it's raining, it's about 10 o'clock at night, I'm having an umbrella. And I walk into this little intersection, and it just fits one car, and in the middle of this intersection is a man standing in the dark, facing up the sky and letting the rain fall on his face and on his body. And so I'm always interested in people, so I kind of stop my track and stand quietly observing this man. Because I thought, what's he doing in the middle of this little intersection in his little streets, standing there in the evening, catching the rain on his face? And after a while, he noticed me, and he calls me over, and he spoke a little bit of English. And he told me his profession. He said that he was painting Japanese Buddhist altars with very old traditional ways, with old kind of way how they made lacquer and brushes made of women's hair. And he told me that he was really sad because he learned it from his father from his father, so it was a really traditional thing. And he said, I've got no one to pass it on to. No modern person wants to do this anymore. They don't want to work in this very traditional way. And I see the same kind of within the system of Reiki. What is sad in a way, because I think the system of Reiki ultimately, you know, Shodan means beginner's teachings. And so for me, beginner's teachings is really just the first kind of flavors of it. Okuden means hidden or inner teachings. And really what it means is about, it's pointing about what is hidden inside of us. So Usui called it Okuden to already emphasize that the tools we learn in Okuden is not really for external use, but it's actually for internal use. They're kind of keys to unlock what is hidden inside of us. And so therefore we have to ask ourselves, what is he pointing to? You know, what are we unlocking what is inside of ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things what he's pointing to in the third symbol and mantra, if you actually translate that, it means I am right mindfulness or I am right mind. So he's saying that when we unlock what is hidden within ourselves, we come to a space of right mind. So right mind is, of course, that we start to slowly realize that we're unified with the universe. The universe is me and me is the universe, right?
Now, right. We are all one and one with the universe.
That's it. But, of course, we cannot do that in one day. We cannot do that in 10 years. That is the rest of our life.
That's right.
And then we come to Shimpuden, what means kind of mystery teachings. And mystery teachings is really about the mystery of life, the mystery of the universe. So even that, for example, you know, our Shimpuden class is a three-day class. But as soon as I start the class, I say, okay, everybody, this is a three-day class. But this is not the end. This is actually the beginning. And the end comes when we pass away.
Exactly.
And that really, I think, is really the difference. You know, Rose, what is interesting, you know, maybe, you know, a lot of Reiki practitioners have heard of Mrs. Takata, who brought the system of Reiki to the West. And Mrs. Takata, I'm not sure if many people know that, but actually she made a lot of recordings on tapes. And on one of these tapes, she actually says that she went back to Japan after she trained to teach the system of Reiki. And when she was in Japan, she wasn't at that time talking about Hayashi, but she met other teachers who practiced the system of Reiki. And what she was saying is in this interview was actually that the way they practice it, it was very different. It took years of training, and it was very complex, and it was intertwined with religious practices. Now, I'm not saying that the system of Reiki needs to be religious, but what I think she was really saying that it was intertwined with traditional Japanese spiritual practices like Shinto, Shugendo, Shingon, Tendai, Pure Land, because that at that time in Japan, it was such a birth ground for all these kind of teachings. And so then we can see that when Mrs. Takata went back to Japan, and in this case, he wasn't talking about Hayashi, that in one way, Hayashi already changed aspect of that, or maybe even that he didn't learn from Usui the more deeper teachings what Mrs. Takata came across when she went back to Japan.
But see, with Mrs. Takata, I think what is interesting is that you said she made tapes. She never allowed her students to write down notes or anything, but she did make the tapes. But with regard to Hayashi, it was said, I've seen it said that they verified that he was, Hayashi Sensei was a naval officer, but they could not verify that he was a doctor. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what the interesting bit is, you know, and what is really funny, when I first started, I started to look a lot in the history of the system of Reiki, and one person would say this, and one person would say that. And, you know, nowadays a lot of different things come up as history. But, in fact, about Usui and even about Hayashi, there's not much out there, and particularly about Usui. So,
right.
Therefore, I think for me personally, I say, okay, what do we have passed on, say, through Mr. Takata about Usui? Well, we have the precepts, we have the hands-on healing, we have the three symbols and mantras in Reiki 2 and the one in Reiki 3. There are certain books in Japan written by some of Mikusui's teachers or students like Kashi Tomita, Eguchi. So we can read some of those books. And therefore, I see it as like a puzzle piece. So, but if we look at those kind of tools, we actually see a lot of traces to those spiritual practices, what Mrs. Takata talked about, what she came across in Japan. And that, I think, is really interesting. Like, for example, you know, we talked about the I Am Right Mind. So the third symbol and mantra in taught traditionally in level 2, if we translate it as I am right mind, then we also start to see that it's not really about distance healing, because distance healing is where we see everything as separate instead of seeing everything as one. So therefore we can see how externalized things have become over time. So I think when we look at these little gems Mikusui put in the system of Reiki, we look at it from a very traditional Japanese perspective, then we get a much better understanding about what Mikusu was trying to do. And, you know, of course, that's not everybody's journey. Some people really like to learn Hayashi's approach of the system of Reiki, or Mrs. Takata's approach, or a modern teacher's approach. But for me personally, I would really like to know what Mikasuru was practicing and what his approach was, because for me, then I go back to the roots of the system of Reiki, to the essence of the system of Reiki.
Well, you know, this is kind of my own belief, and I kind of came to this conclusion from learning what I could about Usui Sensei. When you think about the fact that he came from a family of Tendai Buddhists, he came from what has been said a samurai family, he practiced martial arts, he knew many different martial arts, he was very spiritual himself, he was enamored with all subjects metaphysical. So it kind of leads one to believe that he was a very spiritual person. And anyone who knows anything about martial arts knows that the whole basis behind the martial art is not, let's go kick some butt. It's spirituality, working on oneself, finding the power within, the connection to the energy, which you may say the Reiki or the divine source, because as far as I'm concerned, divine source, God, Buddha, whoever, that's where the energy comes from, whether it's Reiki energy or our own energy, enlightened energy. So this was around him, and it only makes sense that it really would be very much so a spiritual practice. I think we lose sight of this because of all the hands-on healing and the other, and you know, all the different ways that people have described it. Yeah, you know, who's focused on the physical? Who's focused on the ego? Because you know, you can get these great shiny certificates. Who's focused on, well, it helps with you know, mental and spiritual stuff, but also the physical. So, but I really think the basis is it's a spiritual teaching.
Yeah. Look, you know, I always, some students say, Franz, how do I know I'm doing well with my practice? You know, and I say, well, what do you mean by practice? Just hands-on healing or your self-practice? I say, but in one way, it doesn't really matter what you mean. The most important thing is that after practicing for a while, that we start to see that we get less angry, less worried, more honest, more humble, and more compassionate. And that is so important, because when we do that, then we really start to heal, not just ourselves, but also people around us. Because hands-on healing is a tiny element. For example, I can walk on the street, but I cannot on the street walk up to everybody and place my hands on everybody. Excuse me, let me do some hands-on healing. It would be a disaster, yeah? But I can walk in my Reiki space. What means is I can walk in my true self state of mind with less anger, less worry, less fear, being more compassionate. And therefore, that in itself will help other people to feel already so much healing. You know, when you smile to someone in the street, or when you connect to them, or when you give them a little helping hand when their shopping bag drops, or let them cross the street, or say something nice to them. That, for me, is really the essence of what Mikasuru is talking about.
Exactly. It's the ripple effect. It's if you smile at everyone you meet, that has a ripple effect. And like you said, you help someone, you open the door, you help them with the package, and then they're saying, pay it forward, which is true, because the nice thing that you do, or the beautiful positive energy that you emit from yourself, this does have an effect on the next person, and the next person, and the next person, and the next person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And therefore, traditionally in Japan, the word Reiki actually meant true self. So, and the true self, as you say, we can call it Buddhahood or whatever name we call it, your bright spirit, soul. But when we connect to this true self is really compassion and wisdom, because then we have the wisdom and the compassion to help people. And you know, then it becomes such a part of who we are that it oozes out of us. You know, in Reiki 3, we use a symbol and mantra, and if you literally kind of translate it, it means the great bright light. And I always see it like this. If it's a light with lots of, like a lamp with a shade around it, a lampshade. And sometimes the lampshade is really dark, so we don't really see that light that well. And it's the same with our own inner light. Sometimes we have layers of worry and fear and anger, and therefore we don't really often see that light that good. But when we practice the system of Reiki with hands-on healing for ourselves, meditating on the precepts, meditating on the symbols and the mantras, the meditations like Joshin Kokyo or Hatsureho, performing, receiving, and practicing Reiji or initiation or attunement, we peel away these shades. And then, of course, one day we realize, oh, I am the great bright light. But if we look at a lamp and we keep that image in mind, the more I peel these lampshades away, the more that light will cast further out, isn't it? And therefore, if I sit in a train and my light, I have so many layers, my light is not really casting that far out, but or I've peeled away these layers and the whole train is sitting in this great bright light, of course, that is a real different kind of healing, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Let me just give everyone the number here to the studio if they want to call in and speak to Franz or myself or both of us. The call-in number for the studio here is area code 347-677-0699. Feel free to call in. And, it's amazing. I mean, it everything does start from within you. Another interesting point is, you know, everybody's master crazy these days, but Sui Sensei, it said, never reached master level or never thought of himself as a master. Never was a master.
Rose, what was really funny, I was doing this, I was somewhere the other day, and this lady knew about Reiki and knew that I teach Reiki, and so we were just talking casually, and she said, so Franz, are you a Reiki master? And I'm sitting there and I kind of go, and I didn't know what to answer. So she said, oh, you've got difficulty with this title. And I said, yeah, I do. I said, because for me, Reiki means true self. I'm not mastering my true self. If I master my true self, it means, hey, I'm enlightened. And as soon as I then call myself a master, that is really putting another layer on it.
Well, if you call yourself a master,
I normally call myself a Reiki teacher. But of course, you know, sometimes we need to use the term master because it's been such a common thing used in the West. But I always try to say to people, you know, it's really about, not about becoming a Reiki master, but it's really about mastering your true self. You know, that is so important.
Franz, we have a call. Let's see who's calling.
Okay, yeah.
Good evening, 917. You're on the Violet Reiki Radio Show with Franz and Rose.
Oh, hi, Rose. Hi, Franz. This is Inochi in New York City.
Hi, Inochi.
Hey,
how are you?
Great. We're listening to the show. There's a little lag time, but we've got it going through Chromecast on our screen, and it's wonderful.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we had a little bit of technical difficulty. But we've got Franz, so that's all that matters. And we're all hooked in and we're all on the air, so it's all good.
Well, we just wanted to give a shout-out on us here, and we let some other people know that the Blog Talk Radio show was going on tonight. And one of our... Reiki colleagues is in Pune, India right now, listening as well. So who knows where this is extending to.
Modern technology is amazing, isn't it?
It is.
It's amazing. And what amazes me is, like I said, I did an interview. Someone interviewed me last night from Australia, and we had the clearest, most wonderful connection. Actually, like the same connection I have tonight here with Ron. It's amazing. And then I had a connection the other night with Brooklyn, and I'm on Long Island, and it was the worst.
It's funny. Yeah, actually, everybody, I wanted to say, Inoshi in 2012 organized with Dave the Reiki, New York Reiki Conference.
New York City
was
Reiki
absolutely fabulous.
Yes, Inoshi, I had told, we have a mutual friend in Tony Pico, and I asked Tony about it, and I said, you know, tell him I'm available to him, because I was so blown away by the success of that conference. Just reach out to me anytime, brother. I am here to help you.
Well, thank you so much. I don't know if Franz has heard from Dave recently, but he's been a little bit unreachable because him and his wife, Josie, just had their first child. So it's kind of put our plans on hiatus for an additional conference, but we're hoping to continue the exploration and the creative demonstration of the Reiki intelligence as it prevails in our lives in whatever areas we reside in. And actually, Franz was through New York, I think it was about 3 or 4 months ago, and we met up and talked about it a little bit. So we'll see what unfolds. It's fun to stay alive and have things be open ended and not be super firm about having to do something on a certain date or a certain schedule or anniversaries, and just let life unfold and let the intelligence of the universe guide us and help us see how things should really be. And I find when I'm in tune with that and that Reiki sensibility, that I'm actually moving a little bit slower than the world's superficial acceleration. And I'm not trying to insult anybody by saying that. I'm just explaining what my perception of it is.
We have another caller here. I don't know if we want this caller to join in with us. You know, she want to hang on or?
Yeah, I'll just disconnect and let somebody else jump in. But it's been great being with you and yes, hi to Tony Pico if he's on the line or wherever. So
all right, well, great. Take care, Inoshi.
Likewise.
Okay, it's another 917. All right. Hello, 917. You're on the air with Violet Reiki Radio, Rose and Franz.
False alarm.
Okay. All right.
Rose, I actually wanted to say something about what Inoshi was saying. And, you know, he said, I let the energy just unfold. And I think that is such a beautiful statement, because often we want so much in our Reiki practice. You know, if we want to do hands-on healing or even in a meditation practice or during an initiation or Reiju, whatever we call it, or hands-on healing another, there's all these wants involved. And I think if we let go of that wanting, then we really see things as in Japan, they call it as it is. It's just,
well, you do
as it
know,
is.
I mean, you think about Zen. I mean, and I tell people this, I've really been telling people this a lot lately. It's not about what you want. It's not about what I want. It's about what is to be. And
absolutely,
that
is wonderful.
That takes the desire, the wishing, the hoping, the controlling totally out of the equation, which is really where we all want to be.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we reach that space, the energy actually becomes so much more open. because ultimately, if you think about it, you know, it's about the universe becomes you and you become the universe. The universe is not saying, oh, there's a falling star. Oh, there's a new star being born. Or, oh, something happens here. An Apollo 25 is entering my space. Whatever, you know. It's not really doing that, right?
Right,
it,
no.
It's just being. And so for me, really, the whole system of Reiki is not about doing Reiki, but about being Reiki. It's not about practicing Reiki, but it's about being Reiki.
Right, right. Again, it's more so a self-practice and self-growth, personal and spiritual growth within yourself. Once you get there, once you've mastered that, then it ripples out and goes, you know, other people see it, other people experience it, then they feel it from you. And yes, hands-on healing, if you have people coming to you for hands-on healing or Reiki healing, it's a wonderful thing, but it's not the goal. It's not the end-all, be-all of your Reiki journey.
Well, that's it. And I think if you, I always, you know, say it like this, if you do a treatment on someone and you think that the energy of Reiki is hanging somewhere above your head, somewhere, God knows where, and it comes in through you, into your client, then we have the energy above your head, and you have you who's doing it, and you have the client who's receiving it, is a very dualistic approach. Or on the other hand, you realize that you are Reiki, that your client is Reiki, that everything around you is Reiki, then there is no giver, no receiver, nothing to give, we just be together, then of course the second treatment has so much more potential, isn't it?
Yes. And not to be flippant here about Reiki, but I just wanted to tell you a brief story about, I was visiting a friend one night and the television was on and we were watching television or what have you, and he was claiming, you know, he was saying he had a pain in his neck or what have you. So I started, put my right hand on the spot that he was having a lot of pain, and I was, you know, giving him Reiki. And then another friend was like, oh, but you know, my left shoulder blade, or, you know, is hurting. So I put my left hand on his left shoulder blade. So I've got the right hand on the one, I've got the left hand on the other, and the three of us are sitting there, and I'm watching television. And the one said to me, you can do this? I'm like, yeah. But you could, like, have a hand on each, and you can watch television too? I said, yeah. How do you do that? I said, because it's not me. I'm the channel. And they both felt better.
That's good, yeah. But, you know, I actually posted something today on my Facebook page very similar about television. So, but what is interesting, you know, like, yes, I do think we can do hands-on healing while we do television, and we can do hands-on healing while we walk or fall asleep or do other things. But ultimately, you know, I think we can take it so much deeper again if we are very mindful when we do hands-on healing.
Oh, well, yeah.
So again,
like,
when we look at
it's not the optimum way one wants to practice. It's kind of parallel to the way Sui Sensei was practicing during the earthquake. You know, you have things happening around.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, you can practice in any situation, not what you would want to do optimally.
Yeah, I always say, you know, you have a formal practice and an informal practice. And I think that's with anything, you know, no matter if we practice Reiki or the system of Reiki, or we practice Tai Chi or Qigong, you know, I always say my formal practice is where I sit on my meditation stool and do my formal practice. Or if my formal practice would be Qigong, you know, I stand and do my formal meditation practice and movements. But if my informal practice might be when I walk in the street and someone is falling over and do some hands-on healing, or I am somewhere at the airport and I feel a bit stiff and I do a bit of Qigong, I don't really care,
right.
I do it everywhere. But,
right.
You know, so we need to have both, I think, is really
exactly.
Important.
We have another call here, friends. I believe this is one of my students. Let's see.
Okay.
It's evening 718. You're on with Franz and Rose of Violet Reiki Radio.
Good evening, Violet Rose Reiki. Good evening, Franz. I am such an awe. I couldn't have the heart to call you earlier to interrupt the wonderful flow of the words of wisdom, the pearls of wisdom, and the instruction and the learning. I've just enjoyed it immensely. I tried to call you earlier. We're having difficulty hearing you on the phone and getting in. I tried to call earlier, and then I guess it was resolved because I heard a couple of people call in. I just want to share something with you very briefly, although you know me, Rose, forever, a century.
Yes.
That, you know, all my life I've had psychic experience and mediumship, astral travel, all that. This morning I had a wonderful dream of a Reiki healing that I was healing. You remember from years ago, the old secretary of the General Assembly of Spirituals. I won't mention her name on air for her privacy. And she's now very elderly and very ill. But in the dream, I was giving her Reiki and another lady who were having a debate, political debate, religious political debate. And I said, now, ladies, you know, it's not good for your blood pressure. And I was administering Reiki to both of them. I just wanted to ask you or Franz or both of you your opinion. Is it very common or has it been common in your practice in the very early stages, you know, I've studied Reiki 1 with you, to have dreams that you go out and perform Reiki? I mean, I do in my meditation send out Reiki healing to people I know that are ill or that need healing. I've done this for years in my own psychic and spiritual practices. But have you found that it's common for students to comment, or have you guys had experiences in the beginning when you learned Reiki 1 or any part of your experience of going out in dreams and practicing on people that you know or unbeknownst to? One of the ladies I knew, but one I didn't know. What's your comment on that?
Franz, you take this, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting question, and we can see it from many different levels, I think. I think in the beginning we often maybe do that because we're really excited about, you know, like about performing hands-on healing on people. Wow, now I can do this. You've learned something and you get really excited. So that excitement carries on into your dream state. You know, we all have that when we're excited about something, what is going to happen tomorrow, or we saw a great movie, then in the night we might dream about the movie, you know, that you're with, I don't know, Johnny Depp, or I don't know.
Nice.
We're dreaming.
Right. Well, that'd be nice too, but that's another story.
Yeah, no, but that's another story. But on the other hand, the deeper we go, the more our energy becomes so open and expanded that actually in one way you could say it includes everything.
Yes.
So if we could say Reiki means true self, means void or emptiness or space.
Yes.
So another word we can say, if Reiki means spaciousness, and if our true self is really like space,
mm-hmm.
I could ask people, say, okay, right now I like you to touch space. Now, some people might stick their hands out and touch space. Other people might just sit very still and say, I'm touching space already.
With my mind or whatever, yes, yes.
That's it. We're all touching space already. So if I touch space already now, and if your mind is touching space, then we're both touching each other, right?
Exactly. And thank you. That's a great way of putting it. And one more thing, you spoke about it earlier about the spirituality part of Reiki, which I am totally in agreement with. As I said, all my life I've been a practitioner of spirituality from a very, very young age, and I have over 50 some odd years of practice and spiritual experiences. And yes, to me, when I learned Reiki, I saw the connection. I saw it coming from the universal force, if you want to call it God, the Buddha, the source. And by all means, to me, it's a very spiritual practice. It's not just on your hands-on technique, although it's used that way in the physical sense for healing and all, but it's definitely, to me, a spiritual discipline, a spiritual modulation, or a spiritual practice. To me, it's very spiritual. I find it to be an addendum to my own spirituality and a great, great, great help. Since I've been practicing Reiki, I don't know how many months, maybe Rose remembers when we took the class back in...
Four months.
What was it? I forget. Was it April? I don't remember now.
No, you took your Shodan class with me in September.
September. Is that what it was? Okay. I can't remember days sometimes. I get so lost in things. But I can tell you I've seen a great, great enhancement in my own spirituality from that. And like I said, I've been a practicing medium psychic over 50 years. But I see on a daily basis and my own healing. I mean, when I practiced Reiki on myself, I had a lot of health challenges. I see immediate results. So it's wonderful. I thank the forces to be, and I thank, well, Rose has been a friend forever, but now a teacher, and I'm glad I decided to take Reiki with her. And it's an honor to hear you, sir, and to speak to you, and I will hang up and continue to listen. And thank you for your input and answering my questions. Talk to you later, Rosie.
Okay, Joseph. Thank you. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye.
Yes, Joseph's classmates just took their Okadin last Saturday, I believe. And they're loving it, friends. They're just loving it.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful modality, you know.
And I'm loving it that they're loving it. I have another question for you. What do you think about ego versus a clear channel? We may have touched on it anyway, but.
It is, I think. For the people who know me and who've done some of our classes, I think often it's so hard to get our ego out of the way. You know, I always see it like this. We quickly need to grab it, stick it in the cupboard, lock the door, throw away the key. But then our ego slips underneath the door and comes back again, you know?
You know, it's funny. I see the ego. They have this commercial. I don't know if you guys get it down in Australia for Mucinex, where music or whatever, mucus, they show it as a big, green, ugly monster. And I look at that and go, yeah, that's the ego. We have to kill it. We have to, you know, get rid of it.
Well, you know, I think you see it so often in modern day practices, I think is very much, and I think one of the things is really, I don't want to offend people by saying this, but you know, this is my perspective, is really about that we try to interpret so much, you know, and like what we feel or not feel. So, you know, for me, that is such a trap in a way. You know, we might say, well, okay, this feels hot or this feels cold or this is tingling or I saw a purple ball or I saw this. And yes, it is wonderful, but at the same time, sometimes we get a bit too carried away by all of this. And I think we really start to miss the essence of it. You know, for me, the essence is really to, as I said before, it's like as it is. And the more we see it as it is, the more we actually become free. Because again, you know, the universe is not saying, oh, this star that exploded is warmer than the other star that exploded, or that star looks green from the distance, or that star looks orange from a distance, or blue. It's just being, and I think this is something what I think it becomes a trap in the end. And I also believe that when we practice the system of Reiki, it's about letting go of judgments, letting go of labeling things, because if we think about it, the universe becomes you and you become the universe, then we need to completely let go of these kind of attachments and of labeling, because it's the labeling and attachments what stops us from unifying with the universe, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes. And again, I'm going to go back to, I promise the man is not paying me to plug him, but I go back to Don Miguel Ruiz, because the four agreements, and I actually have my students do this in class at some point, say, listen, I want you to look at the four agreements and I want you to think of the Reiki precepts, and we're gonna see how each one ties into the other. I mean, because be impeccable with your word, the first agreement. We all should try and be mindful of what's coming out of our mouth. You don't want anything negative, or you don't want to be judging people. You don't want to be, you know, talking as is a garbage or smack or what have you. And then don't take anything personally. How many people, I don't know, they call it paranoia. I know she said that about me. Why? Is it all about you? Well, depending on how much of, you know, a relationship you have with your ego, if you're really intimate with it, then yes, everything and everyone is talking about you, and it's all about you. But,
this is the case, you know, and I think often when we look at the system of Reiki, what I observe is that people say, oh, you know, I could feel this or I could feel that. And most of the time, it's all about a negative thing. It's about,
exactly.
Oh, your illness is really bad, or you must have something wrong here, therefore I feel this, that, or this, you know, and it's not about even about something positive. So what I found very strange, because for me the system of Reiki is about empowering people, not telling them that they have some kind of something wrong with them. They know that already, because else they wouldn't come for a treatment, you know. They come for a treatment because they feel something is not working in their life, either on a physical level or on a spiritual level or whatever. Then for me, it's not the right thing to amplify that. Oh, yes, I can really feel that, you know, you've got this issue. But it's about empowering people. So, in fact, we need to empower them with positivity.
Right. Well, then again, that also is coming from the green-eyed monster called ego, because it's, oh, look what I know. Because, you know,
well,
I
know. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like, okay. You know, but, and again, you know, the other agreement is don't make assumptions. Never assume you know something more than another person or you know better. Never assume.
Yeah.
And always do your
best. Well, you know, I think this is a very important thing. Like when a client, I get a client and they say, Franz, what could you feel? I always flip that question around and say, well, it's not about me, what I could feel. What did you feel?
Exactly.
And they go, oh. And, you know, because then it comes from their own perception. And then it's not for me to judge what they feel, because say three people see a red sphere around a person's heart. One person might say, oh, that is love. Look, they're so loving and compassionate. The next person says, oh, no, that's not love. That is anger, because for them red means anger. And the third person comes from China and said, no, the first two are completely wrong. Red means this person is going to be lucky. They are going to win the lottery. I don't care about being angry or laugh. I want the lottery. No, but...
you know, but, it's funny you should bring that up, because I was playing with the phone the other night and doing these aura shots, and one person's aura came out red. And my friend immediately said to me, oh, that means that they're a very angry person and blah, blah. And actually, I said to him, no, the definition is the red aura indicates intense emotion, power, and passion. And this was a photo of that person who had just won an award for their very, very hard work and all the amount of hours and creativity that they had put into it. So exactly what you said, the one person that I was speaking to said, oh, that's anger, where in actuality it wasn't. So, yeah, go figure.
Yeah, it's interesting when that happens, you know. It's and again, that's what I mean, you know, it's better to use positive words to empower your student or your client than kind of really focusing on the negative side of it.
Right, like I know, and you probably get this, you teach so many classes, but like, I'll have a student say, I have a stupid question. And I always respond with, there's no such thing as a stupid question.
Well, that's right.
You know, why put yourself down and say, oh, no, this is going to be stupid. I guess they're afraid. And again, it's the judging atmosphere that we all grew up in and come from, where all the other students in the class are going to think this is a dumb question. Well, don't assume that. You know, ask your question. That's the only way we gain knowledge.
Yeah. I think it's so hard for us as human beings. I mean, I still do the same thing, you know, about judging people. And it's so hard not to do, because I think, again, this is why, you know, the system of Reiki is a spiritual practice. And I also feel, therefore, there is so many layers to be discovered within the system of Reiki. We can say, well, let's just touch upon the superficial level of hands-on healing, or we go deeper into spirituality. You know, I always make this example in a class and say, well, we could do hands-on healing on someone who's got a pain in their knee. And maybe after the treatment, the pain in the knee is gone, but maybe this person is a real bastard and is still a bastard, yeah? Or we could do hands-on healing on the person, and the pain in the knee is still there, but this person is less a bastard. So maybe a little bit more compassionate and kind to other people, but still has pain in the knee. Then we can say, what was actually a better healing? Of course, we shouldn't go like what is better or worse, but right. What I'm trying to say is that healing ultimately is not necessarily always the physical aspect, because ultimately, you know, we all get pain, we all get discomfort, we all get headaches, we all get these things, but if we expand the mind through our own healing or through receiving hands-on healing, then the physical issues we get will have a less emotional impact on us. So, you know, if we just only work on the physical level of healing, I think we really limit ourselves. Plus, ultimately, I cannot take my physical body with me when I die, but if I die more happy and content, then, and in an open way with less anger and worry, then I can really say the healing in my life has been very successful.
Exactly, which brings up two things in my mind. When I took classes in the Ewan Method, we were told 97% of the diseases that people have will be treatable with this method. There's 3%, was it 93, I think? It was 93%, and 7% were only attributed to the physical. In my mind, this says the physical is a very small percentage of our entire body, of our entire makeup, of our entire being. So if you work on the spiritual, the mental, emotional, you're really doing the best thing. The physical is not all that. We feel the physical because we are physical matter, but it's a tiny little 7%. So, yeah. It, you know, exactly what you're saying, it makes sense.
And, you know, I always say, if you want to therefore help a person to heal their true self or their soul or spirit, whatever we call it, the only way we can do it, if we have touched first upon our own true self or spirit or soul, because else we don't even know where to look for it.
Exactly. I know my ex-husband used to say this a lot. There were people who claimed they could do this and they could do that, and all the claims they made in whatever field it was, whether it was metaphysical or healing, you would look at this person and they were so the opposite of what they were saying. And he would always say, well, why don't they start with themselves? I mean, they're talking a good game, but look at them. I mean, really? And more and more that he really did have a point there. I mean, like, if you see someone who's practicing Reiki and they're walking around with all physical ailments, you say, but why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, it's a really important question we have to ask ourselves. You know, what is healing? So traditionally, healing means to make whole. And what means that to make whole? To make whole means really our true self, that we can remember our true self, that we reconnect to our true self. And the more we reconnect to our true self, then even if we get a pain or a discomfort, it doesn't have such an impact on us, because we have that strength, that openness, that wisdom, that compassion, that centeredness, the foundation to support that physical pain or the emotional pain or whatever we call it. However, you know, I also believe some people, they say, we only need to do treatments on people who are sick. But I go, why? You know, the other day I was somewhere and I thought I'd do a regular treatment on my daughter, and this you know, this was in a group, and someone said, oh, is he six? Is it? I said, no, she's not six. And why do you do a treatment then on her? I said, well, because every day we accumulate stuff. You know, at school, at work, in relationships, we come in contact with poisons. And therefore also, it's not just about purifying those, but it's also about that we stay connected. Like, for example, with my daughter, that she stays connected to her true self. Because as kids, we are already so much more connected to her true self.
Right.
We were at a retreat last year in Bali. I was teaching, and my wife and daughter came along, and two afternoons, my daughter, who is, at that time, she was 13, she's 14 now, she participated at the class. And after the class, she said, Dad, can I ask you something? She said, you know, all the participants, all the students, they say, oh, yeah, I could feel a bit of energy here or a bit of energy there in my hands, or I could feel some heat or tingling pulsation there. Or she said, but why are they saying that? She said, because don't we always feel that? And I said, oh, why are you saying that? She said, oh, because I always feel that. I always feel the energy going through me all the time. And because she is still so pure, you know, she doesn't have all these layers yet, what we have as adults. And so
right.
She was really surprised to hear that from adults. And I said, well, lucky you. I said, and that's why, you know, you need to keep doing your meditation. You need to keep doing your hands-on healing to keep that energy moving freely through you so that you can maintain that when we become an adult. Because most of the time, you know, we 25 or 30 or 60, and we come and do a Reiki class to actually experience that again because we've waylaid it somewhere along the line.
Well, it's like children are naturally, you know, psychic, and until the adults say to them, no, stop that, or that's not true, don't believe that, they're pure, they're untouched, they're beautiful psychic channels, but from being told no, they lose it. And as they get older, they find it very difficult to reconnect with that. So it's the same thing with the energy. I just want to make this announcement because sometimes the shows go by quickly here. I think we've got 5 more minutes, and I want you guys to know Franz is coming stateside very soon. He's going to be in Hawaii February 12, 17, and 19. You can check out the website. I believe it's us.ihreiki.com and check under the events. He's going to be in, actually, Los Angeles on the 19th. Hawaii is the 12th and 17th. Los Angeles is the 19th and the 23rd. And then it says here April Midwest. Is that Midwest United States, Franz, or...
Oh,
yeah,
there will be a. I'm
Reiki retreat.
This year I'll be doing 2 retreats in the U.S. It's 2 4-day retreats. One is in April, and the other one is in September. The one in April is in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the other one is just about an hour and a half from San Francisco, south in California.
Yes.
I'll be teaching in New York, Vermont, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, when are you going to be in New York?
So lots of places. San Francisco in April, I'll be doing a Shimpanen class. So, and what is interesting, Rose, actually in our classes, in our Reiki 3 Shimpanen level, we actually often get a lot of existing Reiki teachers who want to take their practice to a more traditional form and also want to take their practice to a much deeper aspect of healing so that they can guide their own students deeper.
I don't even want to tell you, Franz, how many years I've been hoping and praying and wanting to take that course with you. I'm going to do it eventually. One of these, when the timing is right, when the divine timing is right, I will take that class.
That's always the best thing to do, isn't it? When the timing is right, it will fall into place.
Yeah, I'm not forcing it. But I just want to thank you so much for being my guest here tonight. We have a couple of minutes left, but I don't want to get cut off without thanking you because I really am truly honored, and I appreciate your giving of your time and your knowledge and yourself to myself and the listeners here at Violet Reiki Radio and the Seika Network.
Thank you so much, Rose, and it's been wonderful. Yeah, and if anybody has any questions, as Rose said, visit us on www.ihreiki.com, or, you know, you can always send me an email or look on our Facebook page. I'm always very open to talk to people or, you know, read one of our books, the Reiki Source Book or the Japanese Art of Reiki or Your Reiki Treatment. We've got lots of tools available for people. So, yeah, thank you, Rose, for inviting me. It's been absolutely wonderful.
And I got to tell you all, I have every one of those. You'll enjoy them.
Oh, good.
yeah, it was a pleasure, Franz. And I'm sure I'm going to ask you to come back at some point further on down the line, and I hope you will. And
I
give
will,
my best,
absolutely.
Give my best to Bronwyn and the, I guess it's the furry kitties, the furry children over there.
We've got lots of animals here, absolutely.
Yes, the newest addition, wasn't that Mr. the Kitten?
Yeah, we've got some mini horses that do the lawn mowing for me. We've got some goats that do more lawn mowing, and we've got two cats, two dogs, three dogs
actually.
You have
a pig
two
also,
rabbits.
Correct?
It's like, in fact, actually, you might want to interview maybe one day Kathleen Prasad, who is, you know, the Reiki animal teacher, I think, at the moment, which is absolutely fantastic.
Okay. That's something to look into, definitely.
Yeah, yes, he's
great.
Thank
you. I will check her out. All right, lovely. Well, thank you again, Franz. This was an honor and a pleasure and a wonderful evening with you.
You too, and thank you very much. And thank you for all the listeners, and have a great evening, morning, night, wherever you are.
Well, it's Friday for you, so I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, thank you. I will tell you, everybody's Friday is going to be beautiful because we've just had it.
You've just had it. Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot, Franz. Sending you much love, light, and healing.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.